हरि ओ
focus on the purport of Bhagavad Gita 15.17. The Upanishadic verse runs as follows, Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam. The purport is that amongst all the living entities, both conditioned and liberated, there is one supreme living personality, the supreme personality of Godhead, who maintains them and gives them all the facility of enjoyment according to different work. Right, so that means you have all the living entities, the Lord is taking care of them, but he's giving them all the facility, you know, for their happiness and that. Because the Lord wants to see them happy, has affection for the living entities. The problem is the living entities don't know how to be happy. Right? So he's giving the facilities. So in other words, the living entity will be happy by having the facilities that then they use in the Lord's service. Right? Then they'll actually be happy because there's a connection to the Lord. So those facilities are, you know, generally you're offering to the Lord, so nice facilities, right? The Lord is opulent, he has everything, so it's not a problem. Facilities aren't a problem, right? And he has no problem that you use facilities connected to him, right? Because everything he has, he uses in connection with the living entity. Right? It means anything we find here that is interesting or attractive is still Krishna's potency. You know, he puts it there. Right? So now the difficulty comes is that we use these facilities but not for Krishna, for ourselves. Therefore we suffer. Right? But at least if you're willing to use the facilities as Krishna says they should be used, that's better. Just like, let's say you had something, you know, some valuable, you know, item like that, and someone else was using it, you know, nicely, but not in connection to you, but they used it properly. You wouldn't mind so much. It's okay. You know, I mean, it's the idea is that, you know, they would use it and you'd have some interaction based on that. But if not, then at least they're using it properly, right? You know, so it's okay. So that's the pious living entity. He's using God's creation. At least he's using it properly. That's not what it's for, but at least he's using it properly. You know? But there's very minimal tolerance for someone who uses your property badly. Right? When there's no need to use it badly. You just use it properly and all that. You know, it's like you finish with a knife, you put it down nicer. You cut on the board. But, you know, they don't want to cut on the board. They want to cut straight on the table because it takes an extra 10 seconds to get the board. And it's one more thing to wipe up. Instead of just putting the knife, they throw the knife. You know, it's like, well, what's the need? So someone like that has to be trained. So how do you train? There's some reaction for it. You know what I'm saying? You know, every time you picked up the knife and went to cut it on the table counter, if something happened to you, after a while you'd figure out, don't do that. You know, you know it's happening to you, you're looking at everybody else, hey, are you getting this also? And they're saying, no, we're not getting it. And then you know, well, what's it? Okay, they're using a board. You understand? So you figure it out. So the Lord gives all the faculty of enjoyment according to the different works. So just as in the spiritual world, there's all the facility for the different kinds of service and interaction with Krishna depending upon their nature. Right? But that's coming based on their affection for Krishna. Here it's based on our non-affection for Krishna. But still the principle is the same. The facility is given that character, that position that one has developed, not in connection with Krishna, that can still be used in the Lord's service, because anything that there is, it's still the Lord's potency. Right? Doesn't matter how you went about getting it, it still belongs to the Lord. Mm. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's important to note that this idea that you do something means it's not in connection with the Lord, and the Lord is... The problem is that it's not connected to the Lord, and it's His property, you're not using it properly. Right? And even that, he deals with neutral. It's just, you know, it's not, so you're not supposed to deal like that. It's not that he gets all emotionally bent out of shape. So notes. The conditioned souls depend upon the all-pervading Lord for material necessities. They approach him through the Vedic sacrificial mantras. The liberated souls depend upon him for transcendental knowledge. They approach him through purified consciousness. So the conditioned souls, they depend upon the Lord for material necessities, because that's what they want. That's why they're fruitive workers, right? And they approach him through the Vedic mantras, right? So the Vedic sacrifice, the Vedic method, right? So that's the proper way of using the material world. You get to the facilities, right? And so the liberated persons, they want transcendental knowledge. They get that through purified consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore we see is that the devotional process, because you're engaging the senses in the Lord's service, that means then you have to be using the Vedic mantras, the Vedic method. Yes?
Transcendental knowledge, does it have to be jnana?
It can be jnana, it can be devotion. But the point is unless there's purified consciousness, mm-hmm. How will you approach that? How will you get that? That won't happen, right? So the point is that, because here it said here, is that both the liberated and the conditioned means they're all connected to the Supreme, who maintains them and gives the facility of the enjoyment according to the different work. So the conditioned soul, according to his variety of conditioning, he is given the facility to enjoy himself, right? That enjoyment's supposed to be connected to the Lord, but even if he will just use the facilities properly, then he'll be able to maintain them. They won't be taken away, right? Because at some point he might come in contact with the devotees and take up the devotional process, right? And for those in the transcendental realm, then they're given all facilities for enjoyment, and their enjoyment is interacting with Krishna. Right? Because the point is you can enjoy on your own, but it's so much better if you're enjoying with somebody else. You can eat alone, that's nice, but if eating with somebody else that you like being with, that's even better. Right? So the point is facility is given for their happy, according to their different works. So the material world is conditioned work, and the spiritual world is based on their relationship with the Lord, their rasa. Right? It means it's the same principle in the material world, but it's indirect. You know, so they're a manager, so therefore then Krishna, in the form of management, that's who they're interacting with. Right? So then in management, you have so many things. You have the facility, you have the, personnel, you have money, you have strategy, you have all these different things that are there in which you can interact with Krishna as management. Right? And then the various aspects of management, either the control or the power, the influence, you know, the accomplishment, does that make sense? So that Krishna is that. So they're actually interacting with him based on rasa, just that they don't know it, so there's no prema. Right? So in the spiritual world, because the prema is there, then you have the basic sthaibhav also. Like you say, manager, you know, you have parent. It's the sthaibhav. Then within that, then there's so many other subtle aspects of, you know, feeding Krishna, bathing Krishna, dressing Krishna, just sitting with Krishna, talking to Krishna, hearing about Krishna. You know, cooking for Krishna, keeping the house nice for Krishna, making nice clothes and ornaments for Krishna. So those are all things within that that have their, you know, their field. Does that make sense? So that's why it's divided here into these fields, because those fields are Krishna. Krishna is rasa, so he is he is the experience and the whole everything about like one of the rasas. You take parental rasa, he is that, or friendship rasa, he is that. So all those aspects are him also. But the point is sharing that, interacting with Krishna, that's what becomes nice. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what we have to get used to. So then the point is because it is engaging the senses in the Lord's service, right? Therefore, the purified consciousness, which brings about the transcendental situation, being engaged according to the Vedic principles, that's Buddha Yoga. Right? Because if we just take the Vedic mantras without the purified consciousness, or the purified consciousness without the Vedic mantras, then you get karma or jnana. But when they're combined to please the Lord, that's Bhakti Yoga. Does that make sense? Yeah? You can combine them and not connect it to the Lord. Like that. There are those who understand that principle also. There's jnanis who use that. Right? So Buddha Yoga, they're catching that from the Gita. They're using that, but it's still not for the Lord. You know what I'm saying? You know, just like you have karma in the third chapter, jnana in the fourth chapter, then you have karma and jnana combined in the fifth. Then meditation is in the sixth. Right? Because you can use those two without meditating on the Lord, but when you add the meditation, that's the full form of Buddha Yoga. Then who you're meditating on, that's the sixth, I mean the 7th through 12th chapters. Does that make sense? You know, and how to understand that your karma, your jnana, and your meditation are favorable to Krishna. Then you have those last chapters. They tell you how that works. You know, otherwise it means you have to be able to discern.
So purified consciousness means automatically Krishna consciousness?
Purified consciousness does not automatically mean. So we could take here the liberated souls means the conditioned souls, that's understood. The liberated souls, we could mean those who are liberated through the process of jnana, so they're situated spiritually. Or we can mean the devotees. Right? So in other words, it's either means you're dealing with the liberated and the conditioned, right? So it's two categories. But you can divide those two categories, right? But you don't need to get into detail because by the description, the one description covers both options, right? In other words, the jivas who are on the path of jnana and want liberation, though technically they're not called conditioned, they still are because they still are not understanding their actual relationship with the Lord. They don't actually know who they are, so there's still an illusion. They think I'm the controller and enjoyer, even though I'm Brahman. But as Brahman, I'm still the controller and enjoyer. That's still illusory. So you could count the karmis and jnanis in condition, and the liberated as the devotees, because they're the actual liberated. Right? Or you can take it that the conditioned souls means those who are fruitive workers. The liberated are those who are spiritually situated. Right? And the devotees who are transcendentally situated. Right? So it's a matter of condition means karma, and then liberated means spiritual and transcendental. Right? Or that condition means karma and jnana, and liberated means transcendental. Does that make sense? Because it works in the same way. That's the thing about the Vedic, especially Upanishads and that. But, you know, it's the standard Vedic description is whatever is the simplest way to explain it that's complete, that's what's used. Right? It's not brought out and made necessarily so obvious. Right? Because you covered both of those. So it's very common that one explanation will cover more than one description. You know, just like in the Bhagavatam, when they're describing the process of deity worship, it's talking about purifying oneself with mud. So now at the place where it's coming in the description, you can understand that is the bath where you use mud, you know, or soap, or like that. And then after that, then water, right? And then there's Atma. Because you take your bath, and then you rinse your mouth before you finish. But it can also mean, by the description, because it doesn't give any other points, is that it can mean purifying yourself by putting on tilak and doing Atma. You know what I'm saying? The same wording can mean both. So that's the thing about the Vedic, is that this dual meanings, that's Krishna. So that's always, whenever it can be used, then these great writers and that will use it. Because the one thing meaning two things, it's accomplishing many things at once. Right? So that's one of Krishna's qualities, is he does many things at once. Does that make sense? So yeah. Like this. Also, the facility of enjoyment can mean the material enjoyment, the pious result, or it can mean the facility for devotional service. Because enjoyment can mean my own enjoyment, so it's that material facility. It'll only be that. Or it can mean my enjoyment mean by engaging myself in Krishna's service, so the facility for that. So that can mean either the sadhaka or the already liberated personality. Yes?
Just on that point, is it also that like the Vedic, it assumes as a guru to explain, whereas the Western model sort of knowledge is somewhat separate on its own, or something, they're trying to explain everything?
What we're saying is that it would be that you're going to have a teacher teaching you, so they give you this, then, because it will always be your own study, but your own study is based on what you've learned from the guru. At the same time, as they don't make it, Vedanta for idiots, like that.
For dummies. For dummies.
Yeah, dummies, like that. Like that. You go out. Yeah, Vedanta for dummies. It's like, so it's not brought out like that. Because the point is the Vedanta for dummies, that's called the purports. We're the dummies. We're in the material world. You got to be stupid to do that. Eternal life, eternal happiness, like that. Constant suffering, constantly changing, temper, like that. You got to be a dummy, right? So that's what they do, is that the purports are what brings it out. That's what you get from the spiritual master. This idea is that I will, through my own process, learn it. But what they miss out is that, you don't need a teacher, but then who wrote the book? You have these teachers who say you don't need a teacher. But then if you don't need a teacher, why do I have to listen to you telling me I don't need a teacher? Does that make sense? So it's always that you do need a teacher. So that, but the teaching should be such that one becomes, thoughtful, individually thoughtful, right? So that one is able to apply that teaching to whatever it is you're dealing with. Does that make sense? Right? So, Bhagavad Gita 3:15. Regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice, right? Regulated activities, A, are prescribed in the Vedas. B, the Vedas are manifest, Vedas, B, are manifest from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. C, consequently, the all-pervading transcendence, C, is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice, A. You understand? A equals B, B equals C, so A equals C. Right? Devotees many times miss this point, is that Krishna, the Vedas are directly manifest from the Lord, right? And Vyasadeva is an incarnation of the Lord. So the Vedas manifest from the Lord. Right? That means the regulative activities given in the Shastras are actually what pleases the Lord. And he is always situated in these acts, because if he is the Veda, he is the acts that and results that the Veda describes. Does that make sense? So therefore it works both ways. The conditioned soul wanting to use these activities for their own enjoyment, but still they're dependent upon the Lord. The Lord's made the arrangement, the Lord gives the results, right? And they're still associating with the Lord, though they don't know it. That's the illusion, right? Or that someone is following regulative activities, means sadhana bhakti, right? Or it can be the liberated, he's following them, and therefore he's getting liberated, but still, he's not understanding the complete. He only understands Brahman. So if you don't understand Brahman in connection with Bhagavan, you don't fully understand Brahman. Because then you're making duality. But there is no duality, right? There's only Brahman. No, there is only Brahman, but Brahman also has, you know, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So the supreme form of Brahman is the Supreme Lord. Does that make sense? So Brahman meaning transcendence, right? But Brahman as the effulgence, that's secondary to the primary, which is the person which that effulgence is coming from. Okay, so then the devotee is sadhana bhakti. He's following these. The process of sadhana bhakti is given by the Lord. Therefore, the Lord is always situated within the practice of Krishna consciousness. And the Lord will be perceived through Krishna consciousness. This makes sense. So, therefore, the Lord is only revealed through devotional service, through that knowledge, right? So through the knowledge that is appreciated through purified consciousness, appreciating the Lord, right? It's not just knowledge can be understood by intelligence. Knowledge is understood through purified consciousness. That's why the Lord cannot be understood, even though someone is very intelligent. Right? Does that make sense? So, yeah. And someone performs an activity, he will only get a result, you know, a proper pious result, if he follows the laws as given by the scriptures. Whether he knows it's from the scriptures, whether he connects to the scriptures, but still without following it. You know, it's just like someone gets a new machine, and they get the manual, and they read through the manual, and go, oh, okay, if you push this button, this happens. If you push that button, that happens. He's following the manual, he understands the connection, he knows it's authorized. Now someone else just takes the machine, they know nothing about it, and they just start pushing buttons to see what'll happen. But the point is you push the on button, it will go on, because that's what the manual says. Now he doesn't know the manual says that, but it goes on even though he pushes the button. It'll go off when he pushes the other button. Does that make sense? So this idea is that, well, there's Vedas and then there's everything else. No, there's only Veda. Right? And whatever is not understanding the Veda or in connection with it, that's something else. So it'll be Veda what you're doing because it's in line with the Veda, but you won't be getting the benefit of the upliftment from it. You know what I'm saying? You'll get something. You know, and a pious activity performed means you're always going to get benefit. You know what I'm saying? The person will give money, he's charitable. So he gives money to the beggar on the street, and he gives money to the priest. Like that. But to him, he's just giving money. But he will get more benefit from giving the priest than the man on the street. But if he understood the principle of giving to a priest, he'd get a lot more. Does that make sense? So, in other words, the material world is God's creation. It's running according to his laws and his sanctions. So it won't work outside. You want to not use it properly, then there. But even he has to show you how to not use it properly. You want to be a demon, even he has to train you how to give you faith in how to be a demon. Because you have to have faith in something illusion, right? You know, you're... So by stealing or by bothering other people, you'll be happy, or by, you know, you'll protect yourself with your weapons, you know, or your gang. So that, but the point is you have to have faith, right? The point is you're saying, no, my gang will protect me, right? You got 10 guys, and okay, they all have guns. The police have hundreds of guys, and they all have big guns also. How are you safe? If they walked in right now, and, you know, there's no question you can protect yourself. You know what I'm saying? There's no question. It's just not going to work. But they have faith. Why? Because Krishna gives them that faith because that's what they want. So he gives the facility of enjoyment according to different work. So he gives them their little hideout. He gives them their guns. He gives them their little brain to know how to do a few things like this. Like that. Then they have faith. It goes on for them. It works. Does that make sense?
This faith could be equal to identity, like he has an identity, that identity is coming from faith.
Well, no, it's, you have an identity, but you have to, yeah, I mean, they are connected. You have an identity, then the faith is stronger, you know, or if you have the faith, then you can get the identity, but it means you can kind of have one and not the other. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like that. But, you know, they follow each other. So if one is there, the other naturally follows. Okay, so does that make sense? We see the logic here. Is that the reason the things were said, you can only know the Lord through what knowledge he has given of himself. Right? So then scriptures are that knowledge. Right? So then by practicing that knowledge, you can know the Lord. Because the Lord and his knowledge are non-different. So if you practice that knowledge, it's non-different from the Lord. So you connect with the Lord. You know the Lord. Does that make sense? Yes.
The distinction between pure consciousness and intelligence. Is that what Lord Brahma's talking about in the Sweet Sloka when he says those are pure consciousness?
When those are?
When Lord Brahma talks in Sweet Sloka, Bhagavatam, that those with impure consciousness, even though they may be liberated, but if they don't understand you or in everything, they have impure consciousness? Is that the pure...
Well, consciousness is the soul. The soul is conscious. Intelligence is a faculty that one has to analyze things. But the consciousness is what you're conscious of, because you analyze something, but depending on your consciousness is how you're going to use it. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you have a machine. Now, the machine does whatever it does. It doesn't matter what your consciousness is, but based on your consciousness, you may use it appropriately. You know what I'm saying? You know, the like that. You know, the one person uses it for, he has golf, a whole bunch of golf balls, right? So they do one thing, they roll around, that's all they do, right? And so then he uses that for, you know, happiness with friends. They go out onto the golf course and they use these little balls, and how they roll around makes them happy, right? Does that make sense? Now you have another, you know, in the house, the golf balls are there in the closet, but the kid also likes to use the golf balls and their nature of rolling around to interact with friends and be happy. So he puts them out on the floor and puts something on top of them, so when someone walks in, they step on it, the thing rolls, and then they fall on the ground. You know, so it was something with somebody, and it made him very happy. May not have made the other person happy, but hey, that's a detail. You know? Does that make sense? So it depends on consciousness. You know, that would depend on just your own self-centered happiness or that sharing of the happiness. So you could say, well, he could extend his happiness by getting his friends to help him set that out. And so when the person comes in and falls on the ground, then all of it, him and his friends will be happy watching that. You know, so it's, you know, it's more extended. But the consciousness is still, you know, one's not come to the level of seeing all living entities as, you know, being friends with all living entities. Does that make sense? So consciousness is how what is your perspective of it? You know, what is your desires and need in the way of principle? You know, is it for you or is it for a higher purpose? Right? So, you know, if it's for you, then the lowest is anamoy. If it's for others, then the highest is that it's for God. But otherwise, it's for yourself and for others as pranamoy. It's because this is what you're supposed to do, and I'll get the best benefit from that, and others will get the best benefit from that. Then it is manamoy, right? Then it's like, I would be liberated from this, you know, so then you're seeing, but, and, you know, it's a neutral state with others like that. Then that gives you vijnanamoy, right? Does that make sense? But then anandamoy, that is connected to the Lord. Is that correct? Okay, then Srimad Bhagavatam 11:12-17. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhava, the Supreme Lord gives life to every living being and is situated within the heart along with the life air and primal sound vibration." Because the life air is activity, and the sound, primal sound vibration, is going to be the Vedic mantra. Right? The Lord can be perceived in his subtle form within the heart by one's mind. Right? So that's why the process is meditation. Right? Since the Lord controls the minds of everyone, right? Even great devotees like Lord Shiva, so he controls, he's the controller of the mind. So since he is the Veda, he is the sacrifice in the Veda, he is the mantra in the Veda, if that is used, you know, properly, you know, directed towards the Lord, then it's coming from the Lord, you can know the Lord. Does that make sense? So if the mind is engaged in absorption in the Lord through the mantra, the ritual, and meditation, then you can know the Lord. Does that make sense?
It means if you are fully putting in the application,
fully, but the thing is we're fully meaning it connected to the Lord. Does that make sense?
It's full consciousness.
It means the fuller the consciousness, the more you can understand the Lord. The less full, it means there's always some understanding. But it means everybody has some understanding. You know, like Prabhupada says, the Aborigine, there's a mountain or there's lightning or something. It's great, you know. I mean, one tribe, I think, in Africa, it's crocodiles are, you know, the forefathers. So they consider them great. So they're able to appreciate some aspect of God through nature, through the greatness that is seen in nature. Right? So, but it's not a complete understanding. God's so much more than that. But that much, at least that much, they are God conscious. So you could say on that level, then that tribal is actually more advanced in consciousness, though not very sophisticated in his lifestyle, but more advanced in consciousness than, let's say, a city person who has no connection with nature and thinks it's just whatever I do is what I get. You know what I'm saying? Is that, yeah. So the consciousness is here, like that. So it's also very important, because we have to be used to this. It'll make life a lot easier. Is that the Vedas have a language that they use, right? And it's just the science of, especially Vedanta, it's the science of the soul, the Supreme Lord, and the material energy. Like, you know, God, his energy is in the living entity, right? So it will use these general, generic terms, especially, you know, Vedantic Upanishadic terms. Now, we understand them in relationship to devotional service. So now, the Vaishnava, perspective is the nicer, the more complete form. You know, it has a more pleasant. And the Gaudiya is even more sweet than that. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, I could say, okay, Valentine's is a day when there's an opportunity the boy can show affection for a girl by giving her a gift. So that's just a fact, right? But that doesn't sound very romantic, does it? But the point is, does it leave room for that romantic? Is the purpose of it is the romantic. You understand? But it's not defining it in romantic terms. So the Vedas, we're used to the Gaudiya way of explanation. The Vedas don't describe it that way, but it's already included in there. You know, it means you can do, you know. Does that make sense? You know, if we say the boy, out of his affection for the girl, then bought her some really nice flowers and that, and then made a wonderful arrangement, invited her out, and then presented it to her, and in this way he showed us, it's the same thing, but it's more poetic, it's more romantic, in other words, relate to it. So that's the difference in these languages. So whenever it's talking, like we were saying before, it's talking about liberation or Brahman, or we're all talking about God. Even when we're talking conditionally, we're only talking about Krishna. We're only talking rasa. There is nothing else. There's tattva, the position of things, and there's rasa, the interaction of those things. Does that make sense? Yes.
So it's the qualification of the student to be able to see how it can be applied.
Yes. That means that's just natural. He's able to appreciate that. You know what I'm saying? In other words, what the Vedanta is getting is used to, because it's Vedanta. We're used to, at best, generally, some religious kind of concept. right? Just being good, being nice, right work, good results, good activity, pious, and a bad person who doesn't do that. Right? Does that make sense? Or even worse, is impious person, someone who doesn't do the pious activities that I do in the way I do them. Right? I respect God, he respects God, the way he respects is different than I respect, so he's bad and I'm good. You know, that's even, you know, lower, right? So then the difficulty comes is that we have to be able to translate these things. Otherwise, then to say, oh, well, this is all Vedic, we don't care for that, we're Gaudiyas. No, but the point is Gaudiya is the most wonderful presentation of Vedanta, right? So the thing is though the Vedas, much of the time, they describe things through the vocabulary and language of religion. So we're used to religion because of the element of profit and loss, gain and safety, right? That's why does somebody do religion unless there's gain and safety, right? So we're used to that element. Right, and doing something, getting something done, being efficient about it. So if religion will do that, great, and if it won't, then what's the point? So we're not necessarily used to that. These things are describing something higher, not something lower. Right, religion is not supposed to be used for artha and kama. They'll come automatically, but that's not what it's for. It's supposed to be for freeing you from the material entanglement and situating yourself in devotional service. That's what religion is for. It's right in the middle. Right? The five levels of consciousness. It's the middle. Because it's the form, the ideal form for engaging in the Lord's service that, you know, without attachment, without attachment frees you, liberates you, and doing it for Krishna gets you devotion. Right? But because of the mechanics of it, right, you're getting a result that's for Krishna, but it's not for... How you say? It's not for you, right? So, it's for Krishna, that's the devotional. It's not for you, that's the position of liberation, the moksha. But, what are you offering? Right? I perform the religious activity, what am I offering? Is there a result from the religious performance? What do we technically call that when we're talking about using this terminology? The fruit. So what is that called? We've already mentioned dharma, moksha, and bhakti.
Arta.
So it's artha. And it'll be used for what?
Kama.
But who's kama?
Should be Krishna's.
Yeah, Krishna's kama. So then it's devotion. That's the way it's supposed to go. So you perform dharma, artha and kama will automatically come. Because if there's artha, somebody's going to enjoy it, so that's kama. But you're not doing the artha the dharma for artha and kama. You're doing the dharma to engage the result for Krishna's pleasure. You understand? So simultaneously, then you're getting these things at once. So that's why there's no conflict with the Vaishnava philosophy and all these other activities that people do. What's wrong? He's performed dharma. Now he's gotten artha. Is that wrong? No, that's just mechanics. And that they'll be enjoyed. Is that wrong? No. What's wrong?
It's for me.
It's for the individual. It's not for God. So the consciousness is wrong. You understand? So in that, the artha is what you're dealing with in a detached way. Does that make sense? So artha and moksha go together. And the kama... It's not my enjoyment, it's Krishna's enjoyment. That's the bhakti, that's the anandamoy. You understand? So when anandamoy is not applied, then it becomes the kama. Right? It means anandamoy. Right? The moksha, you know, it's not being it becomes the artha. And then the dharma is just, you know, dharma's dharma, it doesn't change. It's just a matter of what you're doing it for. Because dharma can be used to get artha, you know, like that, to take care of your family and all that, or can be get artha to enjoy yourself, or to get you know, the facility to use it in renunciation to get liberated, or to have something to offer to Krishna. So dharma is simply the situation in which all activities of human life can be engaged in the Lord's service. Does this make sense? So we shouldn't be scared of it. What we're scared of is anything that's not connected to Krishna. Right? So now, as coming from a background where we're, you know, generally speaking, most of what we do, we wouldn't link it back to the Vedas, right? I think I can kind of safely say that in most cases. A few here, maybe there's some. But for most everybody else here, then, you know, that would be the, you know. You know, you got up in the morning only because you had to go to school, or cartoons were on, or you had to go to work, right? Or it was time to go out fishing with your friends. Otherwise, you'd just keep sleeping, right? It's not like you're supposed to get up because Shastra says, right? Okay, so...
Unless you call the cartoon Shastra.
much to learn.
In our part of the world, it was the best we got.
Yeah, means, you know, how about the... Yeah. Somehow I've completely forgotten what that point was, what I was going to do with that point.
Sorry. Shastra.
You're saying it wasn't getting to do with Dharma. We didn't do it because of...
Yeah, but then it was before that where we started. Because that was the point. That was just to say, is to make the distinction.
Language of the Vedas, language of Gaudiya.
Yeah, that was even before that. That was good. Okay. Oh well, we'll just keep going. The Lord also assumes the gross form as the various sounds of the Vedas, right? So the sounds of the Vedas, like that, composed of short and long vowels and consonants of different intonations, right? That's such a perfect definition of the Vedic verses. Because you have long and short vowels, and the consonants are of different intonations. They have, you know, three notes that they can be chanted at. Or in Samaveda, seven notes. So then that makes up the Vedic. So he takes that gross form, you know, which we'll take as subtle, you know, subtle sound. That's the gross form. Right? So then, you know, that goes back before, is that he's approached through these mantras. Right? And that, but a purified consciousness, then you get transcendental knowledge. So you're performing the activity. You're giving the results to Krishna, so you're getting so from that you're getting renunciation because you did it, how you say, the results weren't for yourself, right? And you're getting knowledge because the knowledge is coming from the purified consciousness, right? It means by the Lord being pleased with the consciousness being directed towards Him, then you get knowledge, right? Even if it's a little directed towards Him, you know, the path of Jnana. They get knowledge, but not complete knowledge. Right? But when it's directed towards Krishna himself, then you get the transcendental knowledge of the relationship with the Lord. Right? Otherwise, you get liberation. Does this make sense? Bhagavad Gita 13:25-26. Some perceive the super soul within themselves through meditation, others through the cultivation of knowledge, and still others through working without fruit of desire. Right? Because the point is, if you're working with fruit of desire, you're not going to get knowledge. Mm. Right? You're going to get material necessities. Mm. Right? So that means to work without a desire for fruit of results means there's a purification of consciousness. Right? We brought it up, you know, we're bringing it up a few notches. Right? Because the karmi he's performing religious activities, but it may simply be because he wants to go to the heavenly planets and enjoy himself. So actually, his consciousness is anamoy, though he is purified enough to use manamoy as the method to get it. Right? Maybe it's just whatever's within reach, catch it, put it in your mouth. Right? But here he's willing to use these uplifting processes. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So those through meditation, the yogis, others through the cultivation of knowledge, the jnanis, still others through working without fruit of desire, so that naishkarmya. Right? Again, there are those who, although not conversant in spiritual knowledge, begin to worship the Supreme Person upon hearing about Him from others. Shudvanyebha upasate. Right? Because you always have to hear about the Lord from others. It's not just going to happen. You're hearing from others. Right? So either you're hearing from the Lord or hearing from the devotees. Because of their tendency to hear from authorities, they also transcend the path of birth and death. So what we're saying here is by understanding the super soul, you transcend birth and death. So the devotee, then by hearing about the Lord, just having that interest, he accepts the authority of those who are speaking about the Lord. And he has an affinity for hearing. Right? He will come to that. He will know the Lord and therefore come to the transcendental position. Right? Does that make sense? So, if in his conditioning, right, he can use dhyana yoga, jnana yoga, or karma yoga, or that combination of buddhi yoga, then nice. It's just the more tools you have, great. But even if not, just that he's willing to hear, that's all. He's willing to hear from authority, that itself will take him back to Godhead. Does that make sense? Because naturally with time, knowledge and renunciation come, right? So his knowledge shall be able to cultivate, and renunciation, so he'll be able to perform work without fruit of desires. It'll come automatically by the devotional process. These others are, you have that tool, you're using it. And then you're connecting that back to Krishna. But the other is just you're directly connecting to Krishna. Automatically these tools come. And because you're always connecting it to Krishna and hearing about Krishna, you'll think about Krishna, remember Krishna. So therefore the meditation automatically happens.
So Maharaj, in this case, the hearing can be equated to devotional service. I'm already doing devotional service by hearing.
Yeah, because that's where it starts, from hearing. It's, of course, the others had to have heard from authorities. But if they've heard from authorities and they're using those processes to get to the super soul, but here it's just the hearing process itself will take you to the super soul. You know, it's just how much you can add in. Like that. But you know what I'm saying? If you have these, they work for you. Great. If they don't worry about it. Just hearing about Krishna will. But if you don't hear about Krishna and you don't meditate on Krishna or, you know, cultivate through knowledge or work without fruit or results, then you're not going to have a whole lot going for it, right? But if you're willing to hear, you like to hear, right? You know, temple pro, you go, you hear, you know, you kirtans or you're chanting or like to read about Krishna, like this. So that itself will perfect everything. You had something?
Yes. I think it has something to do with hearing. You said by hearing and hearing the result will come. I think, again, it's going back to myself. What if a person who's hearing and hearing, still, for him the penny's still not dropping? Is that desire or lack of?
It can be lack of desire, but that generally means there's something else there's something else that is distracting, right? So it's just a matter of when we continue the process, it will accumulate. It'll eventually work like that. But the point is, it's just to continue the process, to keep, because all processes start from hearing. So if one continues, then eventually it will. But the next stage from hearing is to contemplate it and apply it. So that one should be trying to do. And even if one's not getting much effect from that, at least one's trying. You know? But the idea is that by association, so it's also by associating with advanced devotees, one gets this desire. Because they have it, then you can get that from them. Right? So the point is continue hearing in the association of devotees. That's why many times it's put together like that. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees, because that's actually what's effective. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, you might just take it, you associate with devotees and you hear Bhagavatam. No, it's you hear in the association of devotees. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't there a story,
Oh, I don't know the story. Because there's so many stories in all the different Puranas.
That's the one about the ghost in the bamboo. We heard there was one ghost in the tree, and then the chariots had gone recite Bhagavatam, and recited in 7 days each knot of the bamboo broke, and he went back to Godhead. And all the Brahmanas, purified Brahmanas, didn't. And they said, why? He said, he was suffering so much, he really listened.
Oh,
so then they got him to say it again. One of the Puranas or the description. Mahatmyas are one of those descriptions.
There's so many stories in all the Puranas. So Bhagavatam is the main, because they're you're giving all these very nice, but all these others are supportive. So if one knows them, they're very nice.
So it's like you say, hearing attentively. And
yeah, hearing attentively. That's the idea, you focus on it. And you can. Because otherwise, like this point is kind of, we've been discussing this point for years, this one point of this overlap of pious activities being engaged in the Lord's service without attachment. But then there'll be a problem. Well, we're not into piety, but the point is but to get to offer something to Krishna, you have to have a result. That means there must be an action. So the point is, piety simply means it'll be a superior action, therefore give a superior result. You have a superior thing to offer to Krishna. So that's why piety. We're not interested in piety separately. You know what I'm saying? But there'll be always this thing of, because we're not into fruit of action, and fruit of action and piety are synonymous. But then there's also, no, any action that's not connected to Krishna is impious. So that's where we reject piety. But anything connected to Krishna is pious. So then we can say, well, then sinful could be connected to Krishna. Technically, yes. But you have to know what is the element of the sinful that you can connect. Because the point is why the sinful activity is being done. There's a purpose. That purpose is some superior quality. Right? But because you're using sinful activity, the volume of the superior quality that's manifesting is very small. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's say the person has his loyalty to his gang. And the person has his loyalty to his country. Right? One is authorized, one is not. But that loyalty is still going to generate a certain amount of feelings. He feels good that he was there for his people. Right? But the result is going to be very small. Only within that group, and there were 10 of them and he was loyal, he was there and helped out, and now there's only 6 of them because the other 4 have been shot. But it's there. But the other is, it's the whole country. You know what I'm saying? So it's much greater because it's authorized. So that's the point, is the sinful, there is something to connect, but it gets smaller and smaller. The more it gets degraded, the smaller and smaller is the aspect that is, because you're drawn to it. Why are you drawn to it? It's Krishna. But you don't know it's Krishna. You think it's this form of sinful action that I'm attracted to. No, it's still Krishna. Does that make sense? So, therefore, it can be connected, but as one connects it, one becomes purified. As one's purified, then one starts to see things on a greater scale. So, the pious will give a better result than the impious. And what you're getting is so much greater, the experience, the offering, everything. Because ultimately, even though it's Krishna, is that what Krishna once offered to him? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Let's say there's an activity. Like Mother Yashoda is let's see. Right, Mother Yashoda is going to feed Krishna, right? She picks it up, puts it in his mouth, all this and that, sits him on his lap. Okay, bona fide activity, okay? But let's say the gopis are feeding Krishna. Are they going to do it that way? No. So the point is Krishna wants, means according to the nature, is according to how that activity should be performed. The principle of wanting to do something for Krishna here, in this case, feeding him. So it's going to be different. You know what I'm saying? You know, Mother Yashoda is going to pick things up off of Krishna's plate and put it in his mouth. The cowherd boy is going to pick up something off his own plate and put it on Krishna's plate. You understand? Does that make sense? So you have these... It's just, it works in that situation. So in other words, the sinful activity, trying to engage that, it's as you progress, you see it's not in accordance with your duty. In other words, your nature, so therefore your relationship with Krishna in that form. Does that make sense? Even though, because here when we're defining sinful, sinful means it's not your service. Right? And then there's activities that are not recommended for anybody. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, many times, sinful is just doing something that's not for you to do. But it's not sinful for someone else to do. Right? So the point is based on the relationship. So if you have a relationship with Krishna, you know, cooperating with others. Okay? So again, go back to this example. So you're cooperating with the other members of the gang. But it's not necessarily beneficial for the social system. You know, there's something in it for those few involved. Does that make sense? But it doesn't go beyond. But the person who's cooperating with, you know, the community, you know, that's being, you know, authorized by the, you know, the, let's say, the city council or, you know, something like that. That, then so many more people will get benefit, even the gang members will get benefit. You know what I'm saying? But with the gangs, it doesn't necessarily benefit others. Does that make sense? So it's on a greater scale, so it gets more. So even you want to do that, then the person will be working on that level and then see, well, there's actually greater. You know, if I'm doing this for Krishna, there are better ways, more cooperative ways with others and all this. So one will naturally be purified, because purified consciousness will become. So knowledge and detachment will come. One will have more knowledge of what's appropriate and more detachment from what you're doing. So it will move up. Right? The quality of it will increase. So it won't stay sinful. Right? The only reason it can be engaged is because the person is sinfully situated. So he doesn't have something else. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, then he starts from there. Then he moves up. Does that make sense? But then he'll move to something that's more standard, that's pious, because that's the actual proper way to situate yourself. Because then it's according to God's direction. Otherwise, the other's not according to his direction. You know. So in other words, I give a gift to you that you don't really appreciate, but at least I try to please you. So it's okay. You understand? But if I'm doing something that you like, then that's more appreciated. You understand? So that's why a devotee can't say, well, you know, Prabhupada said, you know, about the wino, so, you know, the taste in the wine, that's Krishna. So therefore, you know, that's devotional service, so we can drink wine. No, he is a wino. He is on the street. That's his world. So therefore, he starts there. He sees that what he's looking for is there's Krishna. So if that's Krishna, so then how much more in activities that are directly connected to Krishna? So therefore, what he's looking for is in service, is chanting the holy name, taking prasad, associating with devotees. You know, that's where it'll be found. So as if he actually sees that in devotion, he will be purified, he will be uplifted. Because we don't hear of that, you know, that wino state of wino. Right? They became a devotee. Yeah. Does that make sense? Right? Is that clear?
There was one class I think Jagat Trinimachi gave years ago, I remember, she said, when you listen to music, some like family music before you're a devotee, it represented Krishna, so there's some, you know, elevation. But once you become a devotee, is that a similar concept? Like,
if you means it represents, but how much it represents is so minuscule.
Yeah, but before you're a devotee, once you're a devotee, it's like, as you say, you have to move up.
It's, well, it's just like this. Let's say when you're 8 years old, someone gives you, you know, a lollipop or a gobstopper, one of those kind of things. That's a meal that you're talking about. Hours and hours of, you know, how you say,
ecstasy.
Yeah, you know, like that. But now let's say an adult comes along and they're really hungry and I hand them a lollipop. Are they going to be happy? No. So that's the point, is that one moves on. Because these things, the music, what will it have in it? It's still, those elements are there, but those elements are so minimal on their own. You know what I'm saying? So it's like that. It's like Krishna's in everything. But the point is, it's not a matter of it's not a matter of that it's going to give any satisfaction. You know, so it's just like, let us say you, the kid walked into the room and sitting on one of the tables there was, you know, pots and pots full of different varieties of candy. You know? Does that make sense? So for him, it's like it's a feast. It's ecstasy. You know, he's eating it, pouring it over his head. He's rolling on the ground. But an adult would come there and look around and goes, where's the food? Right? There is no food there. You know, for taste, he might pick up one thing. Oh, I haven't eaten those in a long time. Well, that's great. You know, like that. You know, like that. But that's it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is it doesn't have anything. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's the point. But Krishna's still there, otherwise why do people listen to it? Right? It's number one because it has elements within music expressing emotion that are closer to the Vedic rule. Right? In other words, what Bharat Natyashastra, what the Samaveda defines, it's actually in line with those rules. That's why everybody likes it. And the one that nobody likes, you know, like that little indie band that's sitting there in some, you know, funny little place, and the guys in the audience are throwing beer bottles at him for fun. You know, it's not getting anywhere because it does not very close to actually the rules of, you know, music. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's how it works. It's just...
By accident.
But it's from previous karma, because they just go and sit in their garage somewhere and start playing. So some of them, by previous practice, they're very good at the Vedic music, but not good enough in incorporating it in their lifestyle that they're going to take birth within a Vedic, someone who knows the Vedic knowledge. So they drop from that platform, but they still have that practice. So therefore, when they pick up the instrument, then, you know, within 10 minutes, they're actually playing something. Well, someone else can go to lessons for years and still not be able to play anything. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That makes sense? Yeah. That's the point. Okay. Okay, so that means then you have all these processes. So for the liberated and for the conditioned, then you have the Vedic mantras and Vedic processes and purifying consciousness that will gain knowledge, right? So the Vedic ritual and mantras will get you results, and purified consciousness will get you knowledge, right? So the point is we're getting results to offer for Krishna, and the purified consciousness, we get knowledge about Krishna. Right? But the same process works for anybody. The karmis, the jnanis, the yogis, and the devotees. Right? So all those aspects can be used by the devotee, or they can be used not in connection to Krishna, and then you call them karmis, jnanis, and yogis. Right? don't even know what it is. Two, that all-pervading, okay, note two, that all-pervading Lord who is worshipped through sacrifice is none other than Sri Krishna himself. Right? So the sacrifice itself is coming from the Lord. It's worship of the Lord, but the person that you're supposed to worship is none other than Sri Krishna himself. Hello. 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 And I figure that's wrong. Otherwise, I'd call it a day. Very, very, what do you call it?
Persistent.
Very persistent.
Anyway. Anyway.
Yes. Okay, Bhagavad Gita 9:15 through 16. Others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord. You always need to say hello to some lady. She can't figure out what's going on, so she hands it to some man. And then he'll go hello, and then you do hello, and he can't figure it out. So they either hang up or go, who's this?
You know. You called.
Yeah, where is this? This is Siberia. As if knowing where it is will make it make the number any better. Or then you have, not so much now because people are more used to using the phones, but when it first started, then as they've dialed the number, why are you answering? This is that other person. I want to talk to this person. Why are you talking? No, because it's my phone. No, I dialed this number. It's not your phone. It's this person's phone. Why are you? It's like, you know, going, man, this is...
It's your fault.
Yeah, yeah, it's your fault. You know, it's like, what do you mean? You don't get that so much now. But when they first phones a few years back, that was quite legal. That was really good. Okay, two. Okay. Others who engage in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as one without a second, as diverse in many, and in the universal form. But it is I who am the ritual. I am the sacrifice, the offering to the ancestors, the healing herb, the transcendental chant. I am the butter, the fire, and the offering. Wow. That's the end of that part of the purport. Okay, so here then, say, so they're engaging in sacrifice by the cultivation of knowledge. They worship one without a second, mean as Brahman, all-pervading. Right? As diverse in many, that he is, you know, or his super soul, he's there in everything, you know, but he's in one, you know, like that. And in the universal form, how he's entered everything, all the potencies are his. So he seems like that. But he's pointing out, but it's I who am that. Mm. Right? Because all this, one without a second, diverse in many, is the ritual, the sacrifice, the offering, the healing herb, the chant, the fire, the butter, the offering. Like that. So, but he's saying, I am that. So, the Lord has pervaded everything through these mediums. In other words, through all the pious mediums defined in Scripture as author, he pervades everything through that. But it still is him as the person who is pervading. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the whole point, is that's the difference in the devotee. Means you can follow this process, this nice karma, you will elevate yourself, you will get to the point of liberation. And the same point applies. It doesn't matter where you start, you'll move up. Because even, let's say, the activity is not pious, the mentality of perceiving it is. So it's just a matter of time before the two match, right? That's what Krishna is saying. Is the person is rightly situated. Why? Because of his consciousness, not because what he's doing. We'll take it he's rightly situated because he's doing proper devotional service, but his mentality's off. But, you know, it happens. But Krishna's saying, no, his mentality's right, but his practice is off. So he's situated properly. We'll say, no, he's not situated, but he's not doing devotional service because he's not doing the forms that I'm doing. You understand? It's just a more sattvic form of, you know, you know, I'm doing what I'm doing, what's not there, you know, infidels or goyim or, you know, something, you know, savages or, you know, everybody's got their name for, you know, somebody else who's not.
Heathens.
Heathens, yes. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, so the thing is, but it's this rightly situated is the consciousness, because the soul is what?
Consciousness.
Right? It's consciousness. The soul's not matter. The soul's not the ritual. The soul's not the forms of the ritual. The soul is consciousness. So if the soul is situated in Krishna consciousness, it is rightly situated. Now, the soul's body and subtle body may not be properly situated, so that has to be addressed. But the point is, if the consciousness is right, that will follow. But if the gross body and subtle body are situated nicely and sacrificed, but the consciousness is not, it's just a matter of time before they're not also. You know, that's not going. Because that's samsara. Right? Those who are situated rightly in consciousness aren't in the wheel of samsara. They're just going back to Godhead. It's just a matter of how quickly, you know, sooner or later they're going. But those who are rightly situated in proper pious activity, they're just on the top of the wheel of samsara, and it's just a matter of time before they're on the bottom. And then because of suffering, then they'll go back to the top. Because of enjoyment, they'll go back to the bottom. So that's why we don't take it very seriously. Even though that may be thousands of lifetimes to make a circle, still it's not very significant to the devotee. Right? So, therefore, it's the devotee sees, when he sees this, that, okay, Krishna is the ritual. Means that, okay, the potency of the ritual is Krishna. That I do a ritual, it will give me a result. There's a potency there. So that's Krishna. And within the ritual, this part does this, this part does this. So each part has a potency. And then that ritual is done with this item, and that's done with that item. So those items have a potency. Right? And then to do accompanying that, I have a mantra. So the mantra has a potency. Right? So all those things have a potency that I'm getting my results. Right? And I can see, okay, you know, God has pervaded all this, but I'm looking at the potencies. But it is Krishna as the person. So that's why we remember Krishna. So even though it's Kirodakshaya Vishnu and Garbhodakshaya Vishnu have pervaded everything, right? It's still Braja Krishna who is, you know, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Does that make sense? So we're seeing that, so we take it back to there. Then that remembrance, then that then develops the devotion that moves forward. Otherwise, you will be liberated by the other. Right? Does that make sense? But the devotion will develop. So that's what we're adding to the equation. So when we say is that someone is just seeing the universal form and seeing that, well, you know, we're saying that that's actually a neophyte position, or the position for the jnanis, or the yogis, like this. So in actuality, as far as intelligence and analyzation, it's actually a very developed, very advanced platform. You have to be quite intelligent to just work on that platform. But we're saying it's neophyte. Why? Because they're not including the Lord as a person in it. You know, devotees argue, that's not the way to do that. No, no, this is the way to do it. But I saw it done like this here and there. No, but you know, this one, this. But that, you know, but where's the connection? You know what I'm saying? You know, so but no, but then someone comes along finally and said, no, but Prabhupada says like this. No, but I've read Prabhupada said like that. You know, so at least they got it up to the national authority rather than just how they perceived it. Right? But the point is why did Prabhupada say that? What's the purpose? That's not even being discussed. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the thing is we can get absorbed just in that level. So being only absorbed in that level, that is the neophyte. But seeing using that as a tool to get to Krishna and remember Krishna, that's just one of the tools that's used. So that we see is later described in detail. That's used by the Madhya. Does that make sense? Like that. So that enough detachment is there, it can be analyzed in that way and then nicely connected to Krishna. The other one is my attachment's brought it on, so therefore the other one is by habit it's come up, so then you use it. So it's not that the process is only being situated only there, that's neophyte, or that's for the Mayavadi, the impersonalist. That makes sense. But It's a process used throughout. Right? Does that make sense? The gopis see a tree. The tree is black. Krishna is black, so therefore it reminds them of Krishna. But they immediately move to that Bhagavan form in affection. While others, it may take us a while to wrestle with it, to get it around to something that we can kind of like, you know, stave off the material energy. Right? So that's the difference. So the more it is, the quicker that comes. And the more, then you're just thinking of Krishna rather than all his potencies and how he's pervaded. Right? Because he's so much more attractive than the feature that he's pervaded everything. You know, does that make sense? So that's why we have to hear about Krishna. Right? Because then that will be more prominent. Then when you use the analyzation, then you come to Krishna, and then there's so many nice things to think about Krishna as a person. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why we study the philosophy and we study the pastimes. Bhagavatam's perfect because they're both together. You know what I'm saying? It's essential. The philosophical portion of the Bhagavatam is the Gita. Right? That devotional aspect of the Bhagavatam, that's nectar devotion. Right? But that combination, that's the Bhagavatam. They're just bringing out specialized studies in these fields. You know, does that make sense? And Ishupanishad is giving the same thing, but without the Puranic aspect of the storyline. So does that make sense? Okay, so the next part of the purport. That supreme personality of Godhead is situated in everyone's heart as Paramatma. A wise man who can understand him is eligible to attain perfect peace, not others. Right? So who's eligible to understand him?
Wise man.
A wise man. But what is his wiseness? You know, and we're not talking about great volumes of land here.
Humility. I would say.
Yes, seeing in relationship to Krishna. Like, so he's making that, he's hearing from authority in the association of devotees. So he, therefore, a man who can understand Krishna, then he's eligible to attain perfect peace. Because everybody's looking for peace, right? Means there's anxiety. So what is happiness, technically?
Relief from distress.
Relief from distress. So it's actually peace. Right? So that's why we don't actually call it happiness. It means that particular form of peace is labeled in the material world as happiness. But we wouldn't call it happiness. We just say that's a basis of happiness. Right? And for the impersonalist, he's relieved from the whole material phenomena. So again, all it is that is it's but it's the greater. You know, you've removed this one thing. You know, that's one. You know, you can't find your other shoe. So then that's an anxiety. You know, but then that's an anxiety because you have to get to work to make your presentation. Now, once you've made the presentation, that's a greater relief of anxiety than having found your shoe. You know what I'm saying? You know, or when you go there, going there, then you get stuck in traffic for 10 minutes. That anxiety is greater than the shoe, but not as great as the presentation. You understand? So, therefore, liberation is the greatest of the material forms of happiness. Because if you remove the whole material world, but it's still neutral. So, therefore, he is eligible to say peace, so that actual being situated eternally on that platform, only the devotee, so the one who knows Krishna, he's the only one who's eligible for peace. Others are not. That's why it says, bhukti mukti, with siddhi kami sakala ashanta. They're all not peaceful. Because they're not following the process of knowing the Lord that will actually situate them in peace. Right? You know, because the Vedanta Sutra is trying to give a solution to the problem of the human life, which is not being Krishna conscious. Right? Does that make sense? And then details of that's given in the devotional scriptures, in Bhagavatam you know, nectar devotion, the works of the songs of the acharyas, like this. So that's why that's the natural commentary, because the point is human life is supposed to come to the platform of God consciousness. How that's done, that's Bhagavatam. So that's why it's the natural commentary. You know, it's not a direct commentary, but it's a natural, because that's the next step. Okay, notes. The Paramatma is the Lord of sacrifice, Lord Yajna. He is the goal of the Vedas, right? Because the Vedas telling sacrifice, the sacrifice gives the result. So that's also Vishnu. Both matter and spirit are his energies. Those who know this can attain perfect peace, right? So means you're taking here, so he's the Lord of sacrifice. We're not even starting with the points has already been covered before. We're not dealing with the point as whether we're accepting pious activity or not. No, we're accepting that the activities of the Veda are the proper activities for a human being. But Krishna is the Lord of that sacrifice, because that sacrifice has come from him. He's the Lord of it. He's the goal of it. So it's through him we've gotten it. It's through his potency that it works and gets a result, and that result, and he is the goal of that result. We get that result, then it's to be used for him. Does that make sense? That's why you see your dative and your accusative are two different things. You perform an activity, the subject, you know, an activity, the verb, towards the accusative, right? But you get a result, which is the dative, which is something else, because that dative is supposed to be used towards the accusative. But it's still something separate, because you can get a result and not use it for the person. Does that make sense? So there's still the step is that you perform the ritual, it gets a result, but it's still the Lord is. The purpose is the actual goal of the ritual. That means I'm performing the ritual, it gets me this result that's offered to the Lord. So actually getting the result is just part of the ritual. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, in that case, is that love of God is the prayojana. Getting a result is still part of Abhideya, technically. You know what I'm saying? It means what you can observe and all that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So 15:15. Right. So when you know this, you know God, you know his energies, then you can attain peace, right? So that's the point. So he's the Lord of the sacrifice, the Lord of the Vedas, you know, and everything is his. So therefore that will generate. But if you think I'm the Lord, you know, like that, sacrifice is meant for me, then you will not attain perfect peace.
Not perfect.
15:15. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. So Krishna is in the heart, he's sanctioning. So knowledge, remembrance, forgetfulness, so you can actually perform the thing properly, depending upon your desire and your consciousness. Right? So all the Vedas, he's to be known. So that means anything that the Vedas are describing, it's in connection to Krishna. So in other words, there's nothing technically that we're rejecting from the Veda, because the Veda is only meant to know Krishna. Now, of all the different mantras and all the different rituals described in the Veda that all are meant to obtain Krishna, then some of them are more direct and some are less direct. Right? So, the more direct will mean it is more pleasurable to the Lord. The less direct means it's less pleasurable to the Lord. So, therefore, Vaishnavas accept more direct. So the Shraddharites, these kind of things aren't. It means you're still dealing with Krishna, because ultimately he is the forefather. But it's not as direct as just dealing with him. Make the offering to him. Why you have to go through? Does that make sense? Right? He is the forefather. So you're offering to him directly. He is the controller of the universe. So therefore, you don't have to offer to the demigods, right? He is the potency of all living beings. He is the benefits you're getting from everybody. The mailman comes and throws the paper onto your porch. that he's doing that job, that he's able to do that job, the technique, he got it on your part. That's all Krishna. So therefore all the bhutas are worshipped through by offering to him. Right? And he is the scripture, but that's direct. So you still study scripture. And he is the devotees, he is the Brahmas, so you still maintain the worship of the Brahmas. But those other three, there is no need of separate because it's already accomplished in Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's only to be known. So whatever you're studying, you can know Krishna through it. Everything. Right? There's nothing that you can't know Krishna from. Does that make sense? Like that. But there's recommended because it's more direct. Or it's more pleasing, right? It means there's certain things are recommended if it's Vaikuntha worship, but if it's Goloka worship, it's not recommended, right? And then in Braj, it's even more specific because those are the sweetest, nicest things. So I'm the compiler of the Vedanta, and I'm the knower of the Vedas. So Krishna knows that he knows himself. He compiles the Vedas, he's given the recommendation, and then he comes himself to explain it. And then the acharyas come and then explain to us what of that all we should be using. Right? Because the point is the Vedas are how you can see God and have a relationship with him. But the point is do you want to directly have a relationship with God or indirectly? So all the indirect ones, but that's not necessarily important for us. Because you want to see God as, as we were saying before, as power. So therefore, this is how, he'll come in the form as the king, the duties of the king, all the paraphernalia of the king, all the different activities of the king. So then you follow those nicely, you're interacting with God based on it. It's indirect, you don't know what's going on. Now, if you have that conditioned nature, and therefore you do it for Krishna, like Yudhishthira, then it's still useful, but you see that the potency of all that is Krishna. Right? That's the point. It's all Krishna. So therefore, it's still seen in that way. Okay? So it's just a matter of what's recommended for us, because we want a direct relationship. Right. So therefore the direct activities are always useful. Of in the indirect, some are recommended because they're very supportive and some aren't. Right? Because they're just too indirect. We finished. Okay, so then we'll continue after.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.